CBSSports.com basketball podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I've got Matt Moore on the line. I think we're officially ready to rename this the Pick and Troll podcast. I feel like that name's getting traction. People like it. We definitely pick and troll as much as we possibly can. We're like the Stockton Malone of picking and trolling.
We are. We definitely are. I think you've got to be Malone in that situation, because that way I get to wear the short shorts, which is pretty exciting.
I don't like cowboy hats. I can be talked into a jean vest. And I don't know how to drive a truck, but I haven't always wanted to, but I'm fascinated by the idea of like a double shift.
Yeah, like Kamen and Brad Miller could teach you how to do all that stuff, though.
Yeah, I feel like it's like the new, you see new formations in football now. It's a big thing, at least like as a 49er fan, you see Jim Harbaugh doing this a lot, where they'll shift like three times before they actually get into their formation to hike the ball. And I feel like that's what it's like to be a truck driver, right?
So you know what else you can hunt? You can hunt pelicans if you want to. I think they're endangered, but...
This is the problem I have with fans. Well, no, I have many problems with fans. But this is one of the problems. It's that, well, this is what our team's doing, so I have to defend it. It's okay to think pelicans is a stupid name.
For those of you that are trying to catch up, the New Orleans Hornets are considering renaming their team the New Orleans Pelicans, being reported on Hornets247.com based off of an interview with one of the owners. Is it the owner's wife?
I think it's the owner's wife. Yeah, I think it's Gail
Benson. Yeah, the owner's wife. So they're talking about renaming them the New Orleans Pelicans, or somebody mentioned on Twitter, hopefully we can abbreviate it to Nope.
I just feel like This is nothing a person over the age of 8 would get excited about.
I don't think a person under the age of 8 would. Like, who's interested in a pelican?
Birds are evil animals. We need to establish that.
I understand your feelings about birds.
Birds are awful creatures.
But, like, here's my big thing. And it doesn't make much sense. Because, like, the word Lakers in and of itself doesn't mean anything. And there are no lakes in LA. Like that shouldn't be cool in and of itself. But for whatever reason, it is. And even like the Nets, like that's not really a cool name, but it kind of works. But I just have a hard time that, like, oh wow, we've got a really hard problem in attracting free agents. Let's change our name to the Pelicans, and then they'll come a running.
Yeah, shouldn't they be like the New Orleans, you know, latest Drake album? Like, if you want to, the New Orleans Odd Future, like, that's who you should have if you want to attract free agents.
Or how about you have to be representative of the city, like the New Orleans Binge? How about that?
Right. New Orleans Beads.
Or the Flash. How funny would that be?
Yeah.
If it was the New Orleans Flash.
I would be all for that. Those are all better options than Pelicans.
I feel like they're like, oh, God, the Bobcats is a terrible name. We have to do worse than that.
And now, like, there's just going to be a lot of pressure. Because, you know, pelicans have, like, that gigantic beak they can store food in, right? There's just going to be a lot of pressure to sign Dexter Pittman and Boris Diaw. And there's just so many jokes that go along with that.
Like, Raymond Felton is going to be their top free agent. Right. In the years. Like,
no, you can't say that anymore. Now he's fit and he's awesome and Knicks fans will fight you.
And so, I mean, I think it's, you know... And somebody asked on Twitter like what they're gonna abbreviate to. Cardboard Gerald, who's a fantastic follow, suggested the Pellies. Because that would be the most ridiculous. He said that was the cutest name ever. And I said Pellies versus Kitties on Friday night. And I think it would actually end up being like the Pels, right?
Yeah,
so like,
probably.
NBA action, Pels at Bobcats.
Yeah, that just that's gonna get Anthony Davis to re-sign immediately. He's already asked for an extension.
You know, it's like there's so many cool things you can do, and I'm going to take this opportunity to advocate for something I've been harping on for years and years and years, and I will continue to do for years and years and years. Just do a four-way swap. Look, the Jazz go back to New Orleans where they actually have music. Like, the Grizzlies go to Utah where they have bears. The Hornets go to Memphis where they have lots of bucks.
Right.
Like this, and then the Bobcats can be something else. Like. There's just the New Orleans Jazz makes too much sense.
Well, you know that Michael Jordan would love to have it be like the Charlotte, you know, Royal Flush,
right?
The Charlotte Pass Line. Like there's that's really what he wants.
The Charlotte Craps.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I just think that there's, to me, the fact that it's, I mean, I know the Jazz fans are really attached to that name, and I get that. You got a lot of history, but it's just such a bad name considering your culture. Like, let it go. I mean, it's an insulting to Jazz, honestly.
I think they have to just go overt with it. Like, just put, like, Jazz Instruments as the logo. Like, just an entire, like, brass band.
Right.
Just that's what it should be. If you're going to embrace it, like, you really need to go full bore with it.
Right.
Instead of cheerleaders, you just have guys playing, like, a stand-up bass.
But, yeah, I mean, I just think it'll be fun, though, because if they have multiple options and they open it up for, like, a fan vote, like, people are going to fight. You know who else is fighting?
Oh. Yeah, we could call that a fight. That was kind of a fight. That was, by today's standards, that was a fight. The Nets and the Celtics got a little chippy last night.
Here's what I saw, and quibble with me, if you will, which I'm sure you will. Here's what I saw: Kevin Garnett drives. Chris Humphries tries to maintain position, can't do it. Gives a foul where he basically hits him on the shoulder.
Yeah,
hit him in the face. Hit him in the shoulder. KG, for I don't really know why, kicks his leg out, like goes up on one foot with his leg half, like his leg is like above Chris Humphreys' hip, like he's straddling him in a tango move.
Standard.
Loses his balance when Humphreys taps him, falls to the ground. Rondo, apparently, the only thing I can really decide is here's the thing. Everyone's saying that Rondo was sticking up for a teammate or this. Here's what I really honestly think. I think it was really just, oh, hey, there's Chris Humphries. I think it just snapped. Yeah. I think it was just, oh, this is Chris Humphries. I must hit him. Like, something about Chris Humphries just inspires meanness in people. Like, Chris Humphries is the red slime from Ghostbusters 2.
Sure.
Like, he just inspires this vitriol. A couple of years ago, he was the most hated player in the NBA, and I was like, how could you hate Chris Humphries? Like,
because people are stupid. It was the whole Kardashian thing.
I know.
Which, by the way, I mean, I can't get into it, but I can assure you that the entire thing was a scam from the start, just from people that I know. But
you say you have the inside track on the Kardashians?
I on his side of it, I do. That's why people hate him, is because of the show. Like, I've never met him, I've never hung out with him, but from what I've heard, like, he is kind of how he was portrayed on the show, in the sense that, like, he's kind of an immature guy, and he likes to bust balls, and he's very dry-witted and very sarcastic, and if you edit it correctly, he comes off as a huge jackass, which maybe he is a huge jackass, but it's not to that degree, And it just seems like people ran with that because it's like, oh, Kim Kardashian, she's famous. I like her. Now I hate him. Like, that's how stupid people can be.
So Rondo is obviously one of those people that loves Kim Kardashian. And then
clearly,
like, shoves him, and then he shoves back, and they're shoving each other, and Garnett's shoving everyone, and they're all doing the shovey slappy, shovey slap mush face thing. And then Gerald Wallace,
like came in. I just finally watched The Dark Knight, or The Dark Knight Rises, the latest one. I think 2 days ago. It was the first time I actually watched it, and Gerald Wallace darted in like Batman in the night. Like, all of a sudden, he was there and taking guys out.
A 30-yard dive. He just like beelines in like Ray Lewis, gets involved with it, and then. And what no one, like, I tried to make this a thing last night. I was like, you really, like, Kevin Garnett, like, it was a shove-slap thing, so I'm not saying he should be suspended for it, but, like, Kevin Garnett, like, you're not supposed to make any sort of contact above the head. Like, he does the shove-slap thing above Gerald Wallace's head and, like, basically grabs him and throws his neck sideways.
I got to butt in with all of this to start out, Chris Humphries did more than tap Kevin Garnett. He fouled him, and then he gave an extra shove while Garnett's in the air on the shoulder. It's not that bad, but I can understand how a 7-foot gangly guy would be off balance to where his foot goes up like that. I mean, I'm sure he exaggerated it to some degree, but it wasn't just a harmless foul by Humphries. Like, Humphries gave that extra shove on the shoulder.
Okay.
To really, like, Like, he fouled him, and then he fouled him again, and I think that's where Rondo comes in, and because Rondo really started it. Like, I don't think KG did anything yet. I don't even know if KG was off the ground yet.
No, he wasn't.
And Rondo, like, gets his face, kind of pushes Humphreys, Humphreys pushes back, or maybe the reverse, and then they spill into the stands with a little push fight. I didn't think what KG did with Wallace was that bad. It seemed like they started to get tangled. KG did grab it, you know, the head and try to do a Pedro Martinez, Don Zimmer thing, but Gerald Wallace isn't a 90-year-old fat man. Like, he's just not. and so it didn't quite work. And then KG, like, went back to the crowd and started trying to, like, pull guys or shove guys in the crowd. I don't really know if he was trying to break it up or if he was trying to keep it going. But those are the differences from what I saw and what you're portraying here.
And I think I didn't see the second shove, so that would make sense. Like, it was a hard foul. Like, he got – my one more point was it was like Celtics fans reacted with, he hit him in the face! And I'm like, he didn't.
Yeah, no, he didn't even come close. Like, Tommy Heinsohn screamed, oh, he hit him in the face. No, he didn't. Go have another cigarette. He didn't have it. He didn't hit him in the face.
Exactly. Like, everything's going to be fine. I'm more proactive. I tend to be – you and I are opposite ends of the spectrum because I'm more of the guy that's like, look, you have to protect fans. You have to protect the players. Like, after reading the punch, like, that completely changed my entire perspective on the NBA and fighting. I'm like, no one fights ever. Like, no fighting allowed, because it was just like, you read about how close Rudy Tomjanovich was not playing again, to dying.
Yeah.
Like, he went into the doctor and they're like, so we're going to have to operate right now. And he's like, well, what do you mean? Like, is something, well, no, you're going to die if we don't operate right now.
Right.
And it's just like, oh, okay, this is a big deal. Like, and it changes your perspective on things. That said, and even like the Malice in the Palace, I'm just like, look, that's how riots start. And the Malice in the Palace is the closest you can say to ever, like, a riot in an NBA game.
Right.
That said,
I mean, that was a riot.
Yeah. Like, that said, this is the one instance, not one, this is a rare instance where I would say that the league should not suspend anyone
really?
For going into the crowd because it was incidental.
Like, I think that, see, I actually think, well, maybe I don't know if I think they should suspend, but I'm not going to get mad if they do suspend, because there was nothing really bad about that fight. It was just a shoving match where apparently Rondo has long nails and scratched up Chris Humphreys, who then asked if anyone knew where to get a tetanus shot in Boston, which I actually thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But like, the fight itself wasn't a fight, and if it had just happened at mid-court, I would be fine with it. The fact that it was a little reckless and ended up with guys spilling into the stands, I think just to send a point of, look, whatever happens, we don't go, like, it doesn't go into the stands.
Yeah.
Incidental or not, I'm fine with that, because you just, like, you have to make sure that's curbed. And people will say, oh, this is soft, they wouldn't do that in the 80s, blah, blah, blah. Well, they didn't have a riot in the stands in the 80s.
Yeah.
So, yes, of course they wouldn't do that. If that had happened, we would be dealing with these same rules for 25 years and not 5 years, you know, 7 years.
And, like, I mean, Rondo's getting one anyway, because Rondo just clearly was basically just like, bam. Like, I mean, it just, you know, it was premeditated, like, looked at him and was just like, I'm going to shove you now, bam.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this was like, he's going to get a little bit of suspension.
And if that's Reggie Evans, I wonder if he goes after. Like, I think you make a good point about, hey, that's Chris Humphreys. I'm gonna do something.
Yeah, it's been weird this morning because like Tommy said this on the broadcast. He said, Rondo's the guy I want on my side to fight.
Yeah,
and then Haralabob on Twitter also mentioned it in terms of like, yeah, it's like he went after a guy that's twice his size and all this stuff, and I'm like, yeah, that's Chris Humphreys. Like, I mean, maybe I need to see Humphreys in person to get an idea of just how physically intimidating Chris Humphreys is.
He's a big guy.
And, like, he's a fine rebounder. He's a big dude. I would like Rajon Rondo in that fight. And it's, and like, you could say, well, that's the whole point. It's like, well, yeah, but then you have a guy that's tougher than the other one going after him. Like, if he'd done that to Reggie Evans, if he'd done that to Nikola Pekovic, if he'd done that to Ben Wallace, if he'd done that to, you know, somebody who's legitimately like, oh god, he's like really terrifying.
Yeah,
I'd be a little bit more impressed with
if he goes at David West.
Yeah,
like then I'd be like, oh my god, like Rondo. Yeah. Rondo gives zero expletives. Like that.
Yeah.
That then I would be like Chris Humphreys. I don't know how much of a fighter he is. I don't really know how tough he is, but They're definitely, there's a tier of, at least one tier above him.
Yeah, and I want to say this. Like, I'm a big Rondo guy, so like, I mean, I think, you know, I think he would go after anybody. Like, I think he just does. I think, as you said, I don't think he gives an expletive about anything. That's one of the things I love about him. He has zero concerns for anything. That's like, you know, that's why, like, I think I said this morning on email chain with a bunch of the guys from Paroxysm. I actually think he was deliberately going for the assist streak just because everyone thought it was stupid that he was going for the assist streak.
Yeah.
Not because he cared about it, just because everyone didn't want him to.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And I think that, I like, it's the whole, oh, he took on a guy twice his size and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know you're on an NBA court. You know you have teammates around you. Like, you're not squaring off against five guys by yourself.
Right.
Like, there is a mob mentality, a pack mentality in that whole thing where it's an instinct and it's a heat of the moment kind of thing, but you know someone has your back. You know at least four guys are gonna like, well, other than Jason Terry and CJ Watson, who are just like, oh my God, look at those gentlemen just scuffling. That's awful. Let's stand back and maybe grab a bite to eat.
What say you? What's funny is that wasn't even the nastiest thing to happen during Celtics Nets last
night. I don't know if it was intentional. I don't know if he just got control of the ball at the right time when Paul Pierce was lunging for it. But Joe Johnson's ball handling and that crossover was, I mean, I said it on CBSSports.com, like, he made him do yoga. Like, that's how bad it was. Like, we've seen guys go narcoleptic. Like, Rudy Gay went narcoleptic and somebody else, like, just kind of fell down for no reason. But that was a legitimate, like, you are in downward dog now.
Yes. Like, it was, and I've watched it, I think I've watched it, I would say, what's a good number here? I would conservatively say that I've watched that clip 5,000 times in the last,
conservatively,
in the last 12 hours. And it's, to me, and I saw it, I also watched the reverse angle, which is, we're going to put the other clip up on CBS soon. The reverse angle shows a little bit better. I really don't think that he lost his dribble, and I don't think Pierce got a piece of it. I think he just really, like, to me, he just really did just dip down and just take it. Because Johnson does this against the Celtics, like, against, even more than against other teams. Like, he tends to go to the crossover quite a bit, because
yeah,
that's who Joe is. So he loves doing it against Boston. I don't know why. It goes back to 2008, like, and going and breaking Leon Poe's ankles. Like, he loves doing that stuff against Boston. And the fact that he hit the shot was just like,
yeah, that was actually the fun part of it. Is he, you know, we see a lot of, like, you know, kind of the and-one mixtape mentality of, we see the great play, but then they never finish it off. The fact that he drills a 20-footer right after that was just kind of, that really topped it off.
I made a comment this morning, like, I'm not here to say that Paul Pierce is, like, done and can't play and shouldn't be on the floor. I'm saying Paul Pierce really needs to be guarding spot-up shooters on the perimeter. Like, they keep trying to use him the same way they have in the past as their primary wing defender against ball handlers. It's not going well.
Right.
Like, yeah, he's having a lot of trouble.
It's been pretty rough so far.
Yeah, and it's not just the crossovers. Like, that's one thing. I'm saying, like, I watch him possession to possession, and I get more and more worried about this. And this leads me into, like, something else, which is, I firmly believe the Celtics are going to make a run. They're going to get things together. They're going to make a good run after the All-Star break. It'll be fun times. They'll have this long winning streak. They'll beat teams that are either resting for the playoffs or tanking their heart out. They'll have some legitimately good games against some legitimately good teams. They'll look really strong. They'll get it together. They'll be in the playoffs. They'll probably make the Eastern Conference Finals. They'll definitely make the second round. Right now, if you ask me about the Boston Celtics right now, this is my response. They are bad. They are a bad basketball team.
Like, they, you know, for a team, I think it's a weird transition because it's a team that, you know, has been built off defense, and that's their identity. And, you know, I think they're kind of in that Spurs transition, but I don't know that they've realized it yet, where the Spurs were a defensive team, and then they went, Popovich was like, hey, we don't have defensive players anymore, let's go offense.
Yep.
And I just don't think that they've realized that. I think if they did, they would be fine.
They're dependent, and I said this in preseason, like, they were dependent on Jeff Green living up to every expectation, Jared Sullinger being some sort of massive rebounding, able to finish at the rim, not limited at all by his health issues or his lack of size, you know, motor machine. It was also going to be immediately great at defense because the system will make him so. You know, Rondo, Pierce, and KG will all look great and have no problems whatsoever, and they'll look as sharp as they did at 32. And Jason Terry will have like last season was a complete aberration, and will have no carryover, and he'll fit in better than Ray Allen. Like they had all of these things, and I mean I've talked to you about this like a million times. Like when you have all those ifs, I get worried, and the Celtics have a lot of ifs. And again, I think it'll work out just because I find that veteran teams figure out little ways to kind of jigger wins out. It's weird to watch because it's like being a veteran is inherently good. Like if you manage to stay in the league for long enough, you learn enough to figure out ways to find wins. They just do.
And they're just too talented to play like this all year. I really think that. Like I think they have a load of talent on that team.
Everyone says that, but it's like, well, look, I mean, their talent is either young and inconsistent or old and sputtering. Like Rondo is the only guy I look on that team and go, he is exceptionally talented all the time.
I disagree. I think Courtney Lee is unbelievably talented. I think that Avery Bradley will be talented. I don't think he's going to take some time to get into shape once he's finally back, but I wouldn't say he's a young, inconsistent guy.
I mean, he's in his third year?
Yeah.
I mean, he's in his third year. Like he had a really strong season last year. He does have repetitive injuries with the shoulder, which is kind of a concern. I think Bradley will be good. I'm just concerned because like, he's really being built up as like he's going to come back and be Andre Iguodala.
But he could be. It doesn't mean it's going to fix things. Like I don't see why he couldn't be that defensively. Like he's that good defensively. It's still not going to help their rebounding. It's still not going to help, you know, the weakness inside when you have Brandon Bass in the game. But perimeter wise, I think they'll be fine.
I think the message is honestly that their problems are legitimate. They'll find ways to cover them. But my big thing is eventually in the playoffs, the same things that we're seeing now, we're gonna go, oh, I remember seeing this back in November.
Well, sure, but I mean they're not gonna beat the Heat in the playoffs. I think they can beat anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see what the Knicks look like. I mean, it's still really early. The thing is, we don't have another Eastern Conference contender to really look at right now.
Yeah, there's the Heat, and then there's everybody else. They're not going to beat the Heat, but right. I think they could, based off the talent they have, and, you know, people freaking out about Jason Terry. He's not played well. There's no way to hide that. But he's a guy that I think is going to take a little time to get acclimated to what they're doing. And if he's still playing like this in March, I would be shocked. Like, I think sometimes guys just take time to get used to their new teammates.
I get that argument. I mean, I wrote about that for the inbounds this week. My problem with that is that, like, I look at this, maybe I'm just off. Like, I watch the team and I don't look at that team. Like, there are teams that I look at and go, wow, they just really need to get on the same page. I don't get that sense from Celtics. I don't look at them and be like, wow, they're turning the ball over a lot. That's not their problem. Like, they're not. The rotation problems guys aren't in position. They're just not playing well. They're not making the right decisions. They're not able to do the things that they need to do. Like, it's execution. It doesn't look to me like it's a systemic issue with guys getting adjusted, even though that's like the most likely explanation. I mean, maybe they'll get on pace and maybe everybody will get in shape. It's just.
But isn't I'm honestly asking that. Aren't execution problems systemic?
They are to a certain degree. It's one where I'm talking more about guys are getting beat off the dribble so much, and then they're not able to rotate to find the shooters because they're just slow. Like,
yeah.
It's not about – like it's really weird because the Celtics are offensively very fast, but they're defensively very slow. Like, that to me is their biggest issue. It's not – the help defense has been there. It's been at least in the process of getting there. They're just not there quick enough because – that you can't, like, they'd have to basically leave their man 45 seconds before. Like, you know, they need to stop time in order to get themselves time to get there. And it's, you know, it's all over. I mean, everyone really points to the Garnett thing about him being on and off. And I think that's a huge impact. And, you know, it's that they've got to. I still maintain like they, you know, they chose not to find another big. They chose to go with the we're going to fight fire with fire with Miami. We're gonna go small and try and beat them by being a better small team than Miami is, which I thought from the beginning was kind of suicide. But you're seeing it now in terms of their overall problems because they need a rim protector so badly.
Yeah, but who was out there that they could get to protect the rim?
Darko Milicic, man.
Jesus. And the thing, like, yeah, they decided, hey, we're going to try to be a better small team than them. I just don't know what the alternatives were.
Yeah.
You know, you could say, oh, blow it up and figure it, like, they don't want to blow it up. They're making money hand over fist, and they're a competitive team that's on national TV, you know, once a week. Like, there's no reason to blow
it
up.
And again, like, I can say all this, like, and like I've talked myself into why they're not going to recover a million times, but this team doesn't operate on logic. Like,
right.
They are the engine from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. They run on random. Like, in 2010, they should not have made the run that they did to the finals.
Right.
And, you know, honestly, in 2011, they kind of landed where they should. And then last year, honestly, they made it further than they should have in that series, in that playoffs too. Like I don't really have an explanation for it. Like, there's a lot. I mean, I can point to the things that they do well, but I don't think they do those things well enough to compensate for everything else. But it ends up being that way. So maybe I'm just awful on them. So,
you know what's not awful? What is not awful is Ricky Rubio is coming back. I am so excited. He's not going to be good right away. He's not. I mean, it's gonna. I think they're going to go like 10 to 15 minutes a night, maybe 20, depending on his conditioning, and they're going to have to work him back in over the next month. And even then, it's gonna be an inconsistent process. But just having him back in the lineup, having him back on the floor, the at least one or two amazing plays he's gonna make a night, it's just gonna invigorate the team so much. We all got the news yesterday that he's gonna practice without limitations. Like, there's nothing that's gonna hold him back necessarily, other than maybe the mental aspect of it. But medically, he's fine. And you know, they started selling single game tickets for the Thunder game on the 20th, which is a TNT broadcast. So that's a huge national spotlight. So you know he'll be back by then. And I've heard from a few people that really they think he'll be back by the Cavs game, the home Cavs game on December 7th.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? They've got that is actually the perfect game for him to come back, because then they have 4 days off until a home game against Denver. So if you're gonna test him, there's no Kyrie Irving. You know, it's a weaker opponent. You're at home, and you have a lot of time off before the next game. Like, that really makes a lot of sense to bring him back by then.
When they announced that Rubio was gonna start practicing, did a rainbow shoot out of your chest like a Care Bear?
It did, which I didn't know I had that kind of power.
If I buy you a Hello Kitty backpack with Rubio's face on it, will you wear it?
That's assuming I don't have one. I mean, he has limitations. He doesn't help. You're not adding a good shooter to the mix. And they are the worst shooting team in the league right now. They're 30th in 3-point shooting, but he will get guys better looks. I mean, he has that incredible capability of finding the weak side guy in the corner before anybody knows he's going to get the ball.
And even it's one where, you know, you and I were talking about that last night, on Twitter, but to me, really, it's like, look, even if he doesn't fix their problems, he makes them a better team. Like,
yeah.
The Timberwolves will just be a bit, like, the Timberwolves will be a better team, the NBA will be a better league, the world will be a better place when Ricky Rubio is playing basketball again.
It's just, it's all sunshines and gummy bears.
Sunshine. Puppy breath and cinnamon.
Yep, puppy breath and cinnamon. And which, all right, you know, people tell me, oh, puppy breath smells terrible. It's not about what it is, it's about the innocence of it. That's what puppy breath and cinnamon is about. It's a little bit of spice with a lot of innocence. That's my creepy way of explaining that.
It is really creepy. two games tonight. We got a pair of good ones, actually. We got Miami, San Antonio opens the night. I'm doing 4-point play on it this morning, talking about the 3-point shooting. The line, Heat are giving 5.5 to San Antonio. Got over under a 204. Neither team's playing great defense. San Antonio made his comment last night. They've been fattening up, as I call it, on the weak teams. They beat the Wizards, they beat the Raptors, they beat the Pistons. They've taken out a bunch of really crappy teams in the last 2 weeks or so to kind of fatten up their record after they kind of struggled a little bit.
And what's impressive about it is they've played the majority of their games away already, and they still have the rodeo trip in February.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's one where it's like, there's nothing... It's hard because San Antonio fans always feel like nobody talks about them enough, and it's like, I don't know how to... I mean, I can go on and on about, like, wow, it's just really great. San Antonio just takes care of business on the road, and they just handle all these teams, and they, you know, they win consistently, and they're such a good regular season team, and I really want to wax poetic about them. I can go on and on about Tim Duncan and what he does well, but just, I don't know, in general, I'm just kind of like, yeah, they're good. What do you want? Like,
right.
You know, I don't know. And it's weird because the Heat have kind of turned into that a little bit. Like, there's no drama with them, so just like, yeah, Miami won. Like, you watch them, and at least you're like, oh, my God, LeBron James.
Yeah. Like, the Heat thing is that it's died down because they've accomplished the goal of winning a title. Now we know they can do it. So there's not that inane conversation anymore. And now it's just going to be, they're kind of boring. Like, they'll make highlights, but yeah, they're just a great team. And when the playoffs come, then we'll start talking about all that stuff of can they win the title again and blah, blah, blah. But for the regular season, it's just, they're just there.
I feel like these two teams always play to a blowout.
Yeah, when you told me the line, I was thinking, all right, if Miami wins, it's going to be in a blowout.
They always play in a blowout because it's either San Antonio, and I'm writing about this on 4-Point Play. I'm focusing on the defense and how Miami's biggest thing is, I was really impressed with them for the last 2 years with one particular element of their defense, and it's not, you know, LeBron singular, you know, smothering or anything like that, or really their help defense. It's how they move on a string. It's that they are, I love it when teams anticipate the pass.
Yeah.
When you get to the spot on the rotation before the ball gets there, and the shooters are like, okay, I will, oh, no. And it just freezes things when they expect that corner three to be open and it's not. And that's one thing the Clippers did really well against San Antonio is they froze them by jumping that route.
Yeah.
And Matt Barnes was actually really good at it. Like, if you stay home, you know, you have to help off because you do have to help. But if you're quick and you're smart about when to jump out to the corner and you freeze that corner three for San Antonio, their offense goes, uh-oh.
Yeah, and that's actually a really good point because it's not gambling on passing lanes. It's like regimented, really hard-nosed and controlled defensive rotations that anticipate, and you're not gambling for steals. You're just shutting off the next option.
Yeah, like their entire objective is to create an open high percentage, an open shot from a high percentage location. So they want the corner three. Like that's what San Antonio gears towards.
Right.
If you take that away from them, then you force Parker and Ginobili into trying to play more of, you know, more of the pick and roll, more of the one-on-one, trying to create for themselves. And that's where the Spurs just aren't as good anymore. They're still good. They're still going to be very dangerous. But you got a much better chance with that than you do about letting them. Like, once they start going guy to guy, you're dead. I mean, you know, when they get those rotations going and then Bonner's got open looks for the one thing he does well on the floor, and Green's able to get time to settle himself down, and Gary Neal's hitting. They've got so many shooters that it's endemic with them.
It's a smothering offense when it's going.
Yeah, you just feel like you're drowning because you, like, everywhere you try and go. And it's going to be a real concern because Battier is not going to be playing. So, like, you're talking about Ray Allen, Rashard Lewis, Mario Chalmers, Norris Cole trying to keep up with those rotations on the perimeter. And they have breakdowns, and that's, I think, where San Antonio can win this game.
Nuggets-Warriors will be interesting because both teams are capable of completely just having either a completely awesome game or a really destructive game, but I don't see much in between with them.
The Nuggets lost a game they really should have won against the Jazz. I would say it's their third or fourth game in the season that they've lost a game that they really should have won. And it's indicative of, and it's not to say that it's like, oh, it's a fluke. It's more of like they are doing, they do things habitually that you cannot do.
Right.
And so it kind of depends on how they respond. Actually, it was interesting because Iguodala, I asked Iguodala after the Hornets blowout if the team had turned a corner, and he said, well, we're going on this 4-game road trip against really tough teams, and they get the Lakers after they get the Lakers on back-to-back tomorrow night. And he's like, you know, we'll see how we respond after a tough loss. He's like, we're going to lose one of these games, and when we do, we have to see how we respond. So tonight, I think, is a really good example of that. The Warriors, you know, Bogut said he could be out 2 or 3 months.
Whew.
But they are getting it done. I mean, they are just getting it done. Like, they are just getting it done. And, I mean, Carl Landry's been big. Stephen Curry's been big. Like, they're doing all this. Klay Thompson's been shooting horribly. Like, you know, you got to give Mark Jackson credit for pulling together an omelet out of just a bunch of raw ingredients.
Yeah, that was the thing. Like, you know, everyone got mad at his coaching before he even started because of his commentating. And I guess I understand that, but we don't know if he, like, we still don't know if he's a good coach. It's just, it's one stretch into I would say it's even really his first season, because I still have a hard time taking a whole lot from the lockout season. But he does seem to get them to kind of buy into whatever he's preaching, and I don't know that it's a recipe for success long term, but he's getting through to young guys, which is a positive.
I told Warriors World before the season that I think that Mark Jackson will make a good team great, and he'll make a bad team awful.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I feel about it, where if you talk to him, like, he talks in the cliches that you hear him say when he's broadcasting.
Yeah.
Like, that's who he is, guys. Like, but part of it, which is, it annoys those of us that have to listen to it. Like, players love that stuff.
Yeah,
they love it. They want to be told, you know, just do your job and you will succeed.
Right.
You know, they want to be, you know, you've got to keep that hand up, hand down, man down. Like, they want to hear that stuff. Like, that's what they want to hear. They want a guy to fight. And you know, there are very few teams with the mental makeup to be able to handle the kind of approach that, you know, like Popovich takes with his guys, where you're telling them to watch the debates and be educated about the world. And, like, you have to have a very specific group of guys to kind of buy into that. And even, you know, some of the more, like, even Miami, to a large part, you know, there's guys on that team that get it, and guys that don't. They're kind of like, why are we being so, you know, bookish about this? But the fact that Jackson is able to get through to his guys, it helps a lot. And they've got a solid offense and a good defense. And if you get those two things, you're going to win all the games. And they're getting it done right now. So it's a home game. It's TNT. Oracle's going to be rocking. It's going to be a high-paced team. Kenneth Faried versus David Lee in the battle of who could not defend each other less. Like, it's going to be, you know, that is going to be a pretty rough matchup on both sides. Faried has serious problems with the stretch fours. Denver doesn't have a single guy that can guard stretch fours.
Yeah.
If Lee is able to get his jumper going, you know, he can have a night. Carl Landry the same way. I think Iguodala, you know, Iguodala's been playing really good defense. Ty Lawson's shown some real, he's ticked up in terms of getting a little bit more aggressive. Made a major mistake at the end of the Jazz game, but generally he's played better. So it should be a really good matchup.
So who do you have? Who are your two picks for tonight?
I like the Heat. I think it's mostly based on the fact of, you know, I talk about the Spurs and the fact that Miami's defense and all this other stuff, but, you know, it's at this point, I'm just known of, I don't ever want to bet against LeBron James ever. Like, I don't feel good about it. Like, it could be him playing quarters at some frat house, and I'd be like, no, I'll take James. Like,
right. What about Nuggets Warriors?
Oh.
Take your Nuggets. You know you
Nuggets
want to.
Nuggets are given 1.5. I'm picking them to cover. I think it's going to be like 98-96.
Okay. I think I'll also go Miami because they're at home. With two great teams, I tend to just go with the home team. It's lazy, but I'm lazy, so it works. And Nuggets Warriors, I think I kind of want to give the Warriors the big TNT win. I think I'm gonna go with a big game from Klay Thompson, big game from from Steph Curry, and there will be some wild card. Maybe Festus Ezeli will murder somebody on the court or something. I don't know.
Not to be the other reason you wanted to take the Warriors is because every single time I say anything good about the Nuggets, they fail, and every single time I say anything bad about them, they succeed. I ripped on them last week. They ripped off four straight wins. I wrote about them positively on Monday, and now they lose this game, and then they got the Lakers on Friday on back-to-back. That could be three straight losses. Like, the Nuggets basically, when they're like, don't write about us. Just don't do it anymore.
Yeah, I'm definitely going with the Warriors tonight then.
Oh, one more thing. TBJ, the Basketball Jones, they have like their putt gun that they do on Fridays.
Yeah.
And they drew it Festus Ezeli last week. No one came up with using something like, you know, Festus Ezeli, the best young post player in the NBA. Like, why no one, like, how do you not use that pun?
How do you not use what?
Like, Festus Ezeli, right?
Yeah.
He is Ezeli, the best player in the NBA.
Oh. Well, they did. There wasn't an easy Ezeli, like an easy E.
Reference?
Yeah, there was one of those. I remember that. And I do think Tass threw in a bestest something. So
yeah,
I say I just leave the puns. Let's leave the puns to the experts. Just leave it to the experts. They know what they're doing.
Come on, CBSSports.com this week. We got coverage tonight of both games. 4-point play will be up. Zach's gonna be doing something on Andre Blatch and his ridiculous comments towards the Wizards. I'm gonna be working on something probably about the Rockets and how they're having troubles offensively now. And we'll have a lot more. Make sure you check out all the coverage from Royce Young from last night's Harden failure at OKC.
Yeah, that was really good. And who knows? I might start pitching a daily poem about Ricky Rubio until he comes back.
This is going to get so awkward. We're going to get child services is going to get called on you somehow. But there's going to have to be like you're headed for a restraining order. You know this.
You can get two. All right, Matt. Thanks a lot. Yeah.